coming to America. Boy, are they coming to America. Today, yesterday, tomorrow. You know what? I don't blame them. They want more. They want more than they have right now. Another massive caravan is moving through Central America, up southern Mexico, and their destination, America, they're not. Something tells me they're not going to go check in with Customs and Border Patrol. A lot of them are going to sneak in. And I also have a sneaking suspicion that they're not vaccinated. Now, why don't I blame them? Well, they've been incentivized. They've been encouraged by Joe Biden himself financially and just good old rhetoric. Come to the USA. We'll welcome you with open arms.
What I would do as president is several more things, because things have changed. I would, in fact, make sure that we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
They want this. Joe Biden wants this. He believes he can turn all those people into votes. And if he actually hasn't figured that out, the people who control Joe Biden certainly have. And there is the financial incentive. The Wall Street Journal reported last week $450,000 settlements being considered by the Biden administration could average $1 million per family. This is big. It's all an effort, by the way, to tarnish the Trump legacy. Now, Joe was asked about this point blank yesterday. He had many days to respond. The Biden administration just let this sit there as a story. Even more incentive to come. And he turned it around and put it on the media.
If you guys keep sending that garbage out, yeah, but it's not true.
So this is a garbage report?
Yeah.
Okay.
$450,000 per person. Is that what you're saying?
That was separated from a family member at the border under the last administration.
That's not going to happen.
Okay, so it's all nonsense, right? We're not going to give money to the illegals who got separated. We're not going to give them $450,000. We might give them a little bit less, but still a lot of money. This has been in the works for a long time. The Department of Homeland Security, NBC News, reported that they have been negotiating with the ACLU for months, working out some sort of financial settlement for families who came here in 17 and 18 during the Trump administration. So the ACLU, by the way, they're saying, hey, Mr. President, don't leave us hanging on this one. Take a look at their statement from today. President Biden may not have been fully briefed about the actions of his very own Justice Department. They go on. But if he follows through on what he said, the president is abandoning a core campaign promise to do justice for the thousands of separated families. So, all right, Joe is either, well, misleading us. He's flat out wrong. Probably a combination of both, because this was damage control today from the White House, the deputy press secretary, who's a little bit better at spinning than the redhead.
What he was reacting to was the dollar figure that was mentioned, that you mentioned to him yesterday. As press accounts to date indicate, there's been press accounts on this, DOJ made clear to the plaintiffs that the reported figures are higher than anywhere that a settlement can land. Again, this is something that the Department of Justice can speak to. I do not have anything more to add to this.
Joe Biden said it was a garbage report, but they're quibbling. They're hedging. It's just not $450,000. Maybe it's $425,000, $400,000, $300,000. It's a lot of money, it seems like. So they asked her again, all right, so how much would be enough for these families?
If he's not okay with $450,000, how much money is he okay giving?
This is something that the Department of Justice is going to handle. I just laid out what he was thinking and how the process was moving forward.
Okay, so it wasn't a garbage report after all. Might be a garbage administration, but not a garbage report. There is going to be some kind of financial settlement, potentially. And the people, the illegals, they still are coming. And you know what? Again, I don't blame them. I blame the Biden administration for encouraging this. You would think that the Biden people, they're all obsessed with vaccinations. I mean, these folks are not vaccinated, but they're encouraging them. They want them to vote, or they want to be able to portray them as voting a certain way. Vaccine mandates, we have a new deadline, January 4th. Basically, essentially, the private sector employees, everybody has to be vaccinated by January 4th. according to OSHA, Department of Labor. But here's the thing. It's not up to them, and it's not exactly a law. This is not a law. This is an edict, and I'm not sure if we have to obey it. I'd like to bring in Paul Larkin. He is the Senior Legal Research Fellow with the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Listen to his take on this.
All of the related laws that deal with public health, that OSHA does not have the authority to impose this vaccine. If you take a look at the other relevant statutes, the one dealing with our healthcare agencies, you will see that it is the Food and Drug Administration that has the authority to regulate drugs or biologics. And a vaccine has a foot in each camp. It is a drug and it is a biologic. It is not the Department of Labor. It is not the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. I mean, history and common sense also tends to support my interpretation of the text. There has never been a general federal vaccine requirement.
Hey, knows what he's talking about. Department of Labor. OSHA is under the Department of Labor. And look at that. Look at the convenient guidance they gave today. This is for employers. It's 400 pages long, all right? 400 pages long. Guidance on testing and I don't know. But the headline is January 4th deadline. But you just heard him. We don't think they have the authority to do that. And hey, when has Dr. Fauci ever steered us wrong, huh? Has that ever happened?
The NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research. I will repeat again, the NIH and NIAID categorically has not funded gain-of-function research to be conducted in the Wuhan Institute.
All right. He categorically, repeatedly said it. Today, he's playing games. He's played games throughout this thing. We all know that. But very obvious today, he's not as slick as he thinks he is.
You appear to have learned nothing from this pandemic. Will you today finally take some responsibility for funding gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator, with all due respect, I disagree with so many of the things that you've said. First of all, gain of function is a very nebulous term.
He categorically denied gain of function funding it anywhere. Now it's a nebulous term. Oh, wiggle room. He thinks we don't remember this stuff. I mean, he's got so many friends in the fake news. They won't call him out on it, but it's nebulous. What happened next?
We have spent, not us, but outside bodies, a considerable amount of effort to give a more precise definition to the type of research that is of concern that might lead to a dangerous situation. You are aware of that. That is called P3CO.
We're aware that you deleted gain of function from the NIH website.
Well, I can get back to that in a moment if we have time. But let's get back to the operating framework and guide rails of which we operate under. And you have ignored them. The guidelines are very, very clear that you have to be dealing with a pathogen that clearly is shown and very likely to be highly transmissible in an uncontrollable way in humans and to have a high degree of morbidity and mortality, and that you do experiments to enhance that, hence the word EPPP.
So the E is for enhance. It's not gain of function. It's enhancement of function. We're so silly. Oh. Thank goodness for Rand Paul, huh? A physician and a senator. Finally.
And combined it with WIV1 and caused a recombinant virus that doesn't exist in nature, and it made mice sicker. Mice that had humanized cells, you're saying that that's not gain-of-function research?
According to the framework and guidelines.
So what you're doing is defining away gain of function. No. You're simply saying it doesn't exist because you changed the definition on the NIH website. This is terrible, and you're completely trying to escape the idea that we should do something about trying to prevent a pandemic from leaking from a lab. There's the preponderance of evidence now points towards this coming from the lab, and what you've done is changed the definition on your website to try to cover your ass, basically.
Ooh, he totally nailed him. As for Dr. Fauci, I resent the implication. Senator, I totally disagree. He doesn't have any good answers. We know we've been watching this so closely. All right. That was sad and amusing. Where does that leave us, though? It's kind of a sideshow. January 4th is the big deadline. And take a look at this from OSHA, the emergency testing standard came out all the way back in 1970. The secretary shall provide for an emergency temporary standard to take immediate effect upon publication. So, and also that employees are exposed to grave danger and immediate action is necessary to protect those employees from such danger. All right, we're getting into the weeds here, but according to OSHA's own standards and policies, the January 4th deadline is in violation of those, potentially. So where does that leave me? I actually want to tell you something that happened to me this morning on the way to work. I actually walk through sometimes this amazing structure. It's called the Oculus in Lower Manhattan. It's basically a mall, and I cut through it on my way to the subway station. Something happened. I saw a bunch of cops, heavily armored, great guys on duty. Not these cops, but they were dressed just like them. I said hello, they said hello. And then one of them held up a mask. And I said, oh, I have one. And they said, no, it's required. I said, required? They said, it's mandatory. And I love cops, and I didn't think too much of it at the time in that split second. I took my mask out of my pocket, and I put it on, and I went about 20 feet. And it didn't feel right. Cops are there to enforce the law. This is not a law. You know, in New York City, we still have terrorism to worry about. We have it to worry about all over the world. Something in Brooklyn was firebombed just the other day. Don't you think these guys should be looking for activity like this and not worried about masks? Doesn't that seem kind of ludicrous? I don't know what I'm going to do the next time, but this is still America. This is supposed to be a free country. Stay with us. More fallout from Tuesday's awesome night.
Real heroes.
Real conflict.
Real threats.
Real heart.
Now, there's a place America gets its news.
Newsmax. We're real news for real people.
Millions are turning off the old channels
and switching to Newsmax, the fastest growing cable news channel in America.
No agenda.
No spin.
Just the facts.
Millions watch us. So can you.
Newsmax. We're real news for real people.
All I can say is that the fake news just doesn't get it, do they?
And they are still in a panic over Glenn Youngkin's amazing victory in Virginia on Tuesday night. That was something, wasn't it? But the panic and the crazy things they're saying, how they're explaining this, it's offensive. It's slightly amusing, but mostly offensive.
Glenn Youngkin played the race card for a reason, because he knows it works on certain white voters.
He did stoke white grievance politics to mobilize the Republican base.
He's laundered Trump's really sort of disgusting, flagrant outracism. Yeah. He's wrapped it in education.
Yep. Education, right. Which is code for white parents don't like the idea of teaching about race.
That's the fundamental problem for these parents and this anti-CRT movement. They don't like the way whiteness is being portrayed in these new, more inclusive lessons.
Yeah. This wasn't about those pocketbook issues. This was about how white kids feel talking about what black kids go through.
I don't think any of these folks understand, and they've been looking as closely as we have, as at some of these amazing people who have stood up at these school board meetings coast to coast. I mean, white people, black people, Asian people, Muslim people standing up and speaking so forcefully and so eloquently against this rotten critical race theory. These people deserve so much credit. But back to the fake news, I think they've got some, they've got an awful lot of hate in their heart.
This is a typical case of a white womaning, right? So we see the disrespect, we see the privilege.
White women have taken an active role in the maintenance of white supremacy.
White girls and white women, they get much more news coverage than other folks of different demographics when they go missing.
Why not the same media attention when people of color go missing? Well, the answer actually has a name, missing white woman syndrome.
The privilege of this guy during his confirmation hearing, we saw white man rage on full display for everybody.
Be careful if you get angry and you're a white man rage. Wow. But if you think this was bad, it gets worse.
For the first time in history, white women may have surpassed their male counterparts in the whiteness scale. Blonde white women did a lot this decade. They advanced the cause of white womaning further than they have in any point in history.
Taylor Swift's decade was so white, like she became like unknowingly, or maybe she did know, that she was like a white supremacist icon.
A lot of white women take a dip in the pool of blackness.
They're basically taking everything that, all the beauty of blackness and whitewashing it. My advice to white women is, man your own business.
Okay, this is racist. This is ugly, but this is essentially mainstream now. The Root has gone mainstream. That's a very popular website on the left, and anything left is accepted. Talk about the race card. I thought about the race card when I saw this, the race card. You know who, at least in my lifetime, I think he coined the phrase, the legal defense team for O.J. Simpson. Who remembers where they were when he was acquitted? That was some moment. And right afterwards, one of the lawyers seemed to have some regrets about how they handled the case. I mean, one of the lawyers on the winning side. Remember this?
Mr. Shapiro, you said in the beginning that race would not be a determining part of this case, that you would not play the race card. The race card was surely played.
Barbara, my position was always the same, that race would not and should not be a part of this case. I was wrong. Not only did we play the race card, we dealt it from the bottom of the deck.
The race card. I think the race card almost always comes from the bottom of the deck. Now, it may have helped O.J. Simpson get off on that in that case. That was pretty wild, wasn't it? But it's not helping the people. It's not helping black people, white people. It's not helping our country, this bottom of the deck race card, is it? One bit. No. And when we see the race card played, it's ugly. Those folks on MSNBC who seem to not like, in fact, they seem to detest people who don't look like them, this is dangerous, scary stuff. I've been saying for a long time, though, that America is ready for a serious conversation about race, a substantive conversation about race. But no, they're intent on having a silly conversation about race. For one brief shining moment, Barack Obama himself was ready to have that difficult conversation, but important one, when it came to race.
Go into any inner city neighborhood, and folks will tell you that government alone can't teach our kids to learn. They know that parents have to teach, that children can't achieve unless we raise their expectations and turn off the television sets and eradicate the slander that says a black youth with a book is acting white. They know those things.
Did you hear that? A black youth with a book is acting white in any inner city neighborhood. He said that. He said that in 2004. Did you know that was an issue? I did not know that was an issue. But I know if he said it in 2004, it's not been eradicated. It's not been turned around, because that is an awful mindset to have. He didn't just say it once. 10 years later, as president.
African-Americans in communities where I've worked, there's been notion of acting white, which sometimes is overstated, but there's an element of truth to it where, okay, if boys are reading too much, then, well, why are you doing that? Or why are you speaking so properly? And the notion that there's some authentic way of being black, that if you're going to be black, you have to act a certain way, and wear a certain kind of clothes, that, you know, that has to go.
Yeah, that has to go, but it hasn't gone. And you didn't really drive that issue very much. You can tell he's very tentative. He feels vulnerable. He doesn't feel comfortable making this case because the far left didn't want to hear it. And when he did it, only occasionally they'd attack him. And he basically shied away from an amazing and important conversation that he could have led and probably could have brought on real change. But instead, he played it safe. He was out for Barack Obama. Don't rock the boat. He had too much money to make post-presidency. He's still making the money, but now we know he can't swing an election. He tried in Virginia, fell flat on his face. And now, there can be no denying that this guy is a great big phony.
The big message of Terry's opponent is that he's a regular guy because he wears fleece. I'm glad that the guy can play basketball. You know, many of you know, I'm a big hooper. I'm a, you know, so that's a good thing. You know, no, yeah, you know, the guy can hoop. That's great.
What the hell is a hooper? Excuse me, a hooper? You know, basketball fans, nobody calls it hooping. Anyway, yeah, Youngkin's a real phony and you're the real deal, right? We saw you play basketball plenty. That was something that made you special. You used it for your own political benefit. Anyway, let's get back to the authenticity of Barack Obama on the campaign trail.
We ain't got time to be time. We don't have time to be tired. What is required is sustained effort.
We don't have time to be what? you don't fool us anymore. You never really fooled me. Maybe for a little while, 2008, 2009. We will be back with some important information about January 6th.
Have you checked out the Newsmax Daily Podcast with me, Rob Carson? You get daily news, insightful commentary, and believe it or not, comedy. Check it out wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts or at newsmaxtv.com/podcast.
Who's the opposite? Do you want your house back? Take it!
They're trying to say, of course, that January 6th was the worst day in American history. Some people actually say that. Some people have convinced themselves that that's true. It's not, of course. And actually, there are a lot of great people there, a lot of great people, including some who have just been elected to office. Actually, some eight people have been elected or reelected to public office who were actually there on January 6th, either at the president's speech or outside the Capitol. None of these folks entered. We have people, the Virginia House of Delegates. We have the Idaho, Nampa, Idaho City Council. We have school boards all across the country. Even though they want this to be a horrible strike against someone, it's not, because too many are lying about what happened that day or just not speaking out at all. The Capitol Hill Police, they have so much explaining to do. They haven't. In fact, they did more to publicize this silly football game. They had a football game against members of Congress, Capitol Hill Police versus members of Congress. It's a lot of fun, I guess. But they talked more about this on social media than Ashley Babbitt. And they've never really entertained questions from the public about Ashley Babbitt. What happened? Why did you shoot her? They put out a flimsy report that exonerated somebody who does not deserve exoneration. Anyone can see that. This was highlighted this week. Ashley Babbitt was observed in another part of the Capitol behaving in a mild-mannered fashion, actually walking through the stanchions, we believe, in the Capitol Rotunda. You'll see her here in a moment. There she is. That's not the rotunda, but that's, what is that, Statutory Hall? She has a backpack on. And yes, she looks a lot like a tourist. And I hate it when they call her a terrorist, because she wasn't. Proud veteran of our armed forces. And she didn't hurt anybody that day, and she didn't break anything. And we have so many questions that need to be answered. Whenever they say this, remember, they are lying.
This was the most violent and destructive assault on the Capitol, breaching of the Capitol, since the War of 1812.
The U.S. Capitol suffered its worst security breach since the War of 1812.
Nobody's attacked Congress since 1812.
It was the worst attack on the Capitol since the War of 1812.
All right, none of those dimwits know anything about the War of 1812. If they did, they wouldn't say that. And I can come up with about four or five things that are worse than January 6th that happened on Capitol Hill. Let's go through them. In the 1950s, some lunatic opened fire and actually shot five members of Congress inside the House of Representatives. All these people were shot. You never hear them talk about that. Also, in the 90s, two officers were killed by a lunatic who got himself into Capitol Hill, opened fire, and killed Detective John Gibson and Officer Jacob Chestnut. Killed them. You don't hear about them, do you? And just a few months ago, Billy Evans, a Capitol Hill police officer, this is in April 2nd, was murdered by I think he was a terrorist. His name was Noah Green, 25 years old. He was killed in this attack, but he drove his car, rammed it into Noah Green and some others. I'm sorry, rammed it into Billy Evans. He was a follower of Farrakhan, a Nation of Islam devotee, this Noah Green. You never hear about that either. I wonder why. And when we come back, Congressman Louie Gohmert, who just tried to visit some of those January Sixers in jail, but along with Marjorie Taylor Greene, he was turned away. We'll be right back.
You're on the go and need news now. No paywalls, no cable subscriptions. Just download the Newsmax app from your smartphone store. It's free. And watch Newsmax TV anytime, anywhere.
There's Marjorie Taylor Greene and Congressman Louie Gohmert, Republican of Texas, trying yet again to get into the D.C. jail to see the January 6th detainees. Many of us are very, very concerned about them and how they're being treated. He's been denied access time and time again, but it looks like they're making headway. Take a look at this letter that he wrote and sent to the mayor of Washington, D.C. We find it morally bankrupt and completely duplicitous that your office allowed more than 400 detainees to waste in squalid conditions and be denied their constitutional liberties while you lobby Congress to incorporate D.C. as the 51st state. That is, that's chutzpah, actually. Congressman Gohmert, welcome back to Newsmax. How are you? And I understand you're going to try to go back to the jail tonight.
Yes, we just heard from the mayor, and she has invited Marjorie Taylor Greene and me to come to the jail right now tonight. So we're going to do that.
Why wouldn't they let you in a long time ago? You're a member of Congress. You were a man of import. And but were they hiding something? Why wouldn't they let you in early? You've been trying for months.
Yes, we've been trying for months. And it's a great question, Greg. And I think it has something to do with the fact that the conditions were so bad inside the D.C. jail. And I know there's some people on the left that are saying, well, you have no right to know anything about it. No, actually, the law is in D.C., Congress, you know, has authority, and we have allowed home rule and passed a bill to that effect. But also under the law, and of course, as the law says, we can take that back any time if we find it necessary. But also with regard to the jail, it houses federal prisoners. And so even though it's referred to as D.C. jail, anytime they house federal prisoners, then the U.S. Congress, the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Prisons, all has a role in what goes on there. And that's why, and I think this is key as to why they're letting us in tonight, the U.S. Marshal went down and did a surprise inspection. And I don't know if the U.S. Marshal has heard my comments today, but it turns out we've heard from people on the inside that when the U.S. Marshals office showed up for a surprise inspection, the jail folks were panicked. And so they cordoned off the area where the January 6th detainees are, along with some others in pretrial confinement, and let them go through the bigger area where there were more of the post-trial detainees. And while they were showing them the bigger area, they sent in all this flood of employees to start getting out the mold that's causing so much sickness and cleaning up like crazy, so that by the time they finished the bigger area, then they brought them into the other area. And interestingly, the area they had not had time to clean up, the U.S. Marshal's office said it's totally unworthy to have anybody detained there, and they're shipping out 400 or so people to other jails, mainly in Pennsylvania. And then by the time they got to the January 6th detainees, they'd gotten rid of so much of the gunk and the mold and the nastiness these guys have been living in for many months. And so they said, well, not great, but it's okay. We won't ship them out.
Okay.
They're the ones that should have been shipped out first, but for the duplicity there of cleaning up like crazy while they were inspecting the while the marshals were inspecting the other area.
All right, so Congressman, let me jump in. It's obvious. Sure. It's obvious that they are persecuting these guys. They're being prosecuted, but they're being persecuted because of their political leanings. We know that there are some people in custody who didn't break anything and didn't hurt anybody, but they're still in there. And that's the part. I mean, jail is a crummy place, period. It is everywhere you go. That's unfortunate. I don't want these guys. I mean, that's bad, but it's kind of a fact of life. Sadly, shouldn't be, but it is. But the persecution of these guys just seems so un-American and so, quite frankly, illegal. What about that part?
It is un-American and it is illegal. And you've been covering this so well, Greg, as far as the $2 billion in damage to the rest of the country, and those people get out on the streets very quickly. And then people, as you point out, some of whom did no damage and yet or didn't hurt anybody, and yet they are treating them, you know, like they're Ted Bundy or something. It's just so outrageous. And when you talk about un-American, go back to John Adams after the Boston Massacre. They were wanting to abuse some of the British soldiers that had fired weapons, and John Adams made clear that's not the American way, and he stood up for them in that aspect. I just wish some of the Democrats would join us in the concern, because someday it may be people they care about.
You know, I thought Joe Biden had a real opportunity on Inauguration Day. He could have said, you know what, let's skip the impeachment. We don't need one. We don't need another one, and let's go easy on these folks. But no, he went the other way. Hey,
well,
by the way,
Greg, there's only one reason he didn't say that, and that's because nobody put it in his teleprompter.
Yeah, that's right. He seems to be along for the ride. But listen, the noise and the efforts of yours and your colleagues, you're making progress. You may have saved the life of Chris Worrell. He's been in custody for a long time. He has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. We talked to him a few months ago. He's on the verge of being released. If it hasn't happened now, it's going to happen, I believe, within the next couple of minutes. Listen to him when we talk to him. How are you and how are the conditions?
Well, my condition is deteriorating daily. And I've been, you know, held without any medical treatment for over 166 days now. The D.C. jail general practitioners have told me my doctor is not qualified, and he's been practicing treating cancer patients for over 26 years, but here I am with no medicine on their end.
You know, you're going to see these folks tonight, and not Mr. Worrell. We think he's been released, and that's great, but please give him our best. We're thinking about him every night. And I thank you for what you've done. Hey, can I ask you this? The judge sure. Lamberth and others, are they? He seems to be a good guy here. He seems to realize that, you know, this is not what America's all about. There are multiple judges involved, though, and some are not as enlightened as this individual.
No, I think he is trying to be a good judge. It took months before he started being able to perceive that the U.S. DOJ was pulling wool over his eyes, and then he wouldn't stand for it. But let me also say, Greg, you are having a lot to do with the way things are changing here, because you've continued to bring this to light and help us bring this out. You've done a great job, and we're very grateful.
Well, it's an honor to hear that. So thank you. My goodness gracious. If we can play some small smart part, wow.
Well, you have. Well, you played a big part. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. And again, good luck tonight, and give our best to the folks you'll be visiting. Many thanks, and to be continued. Congressman Gohmert, we'll
thank
be right
you,
back.
Greg.
You bet. Remember the coronavirus task force? You got President Trump on the left. There's Dr. Fauci on the right. The guy in the front middle, that's Peter Navarro, former Trump White House trade advisor, by all accounts a genius. He is the author of the new book, In Trump Time, My Journal of America's Plague Year. Came out just this week, and boy, oh boy, does he give it to Dr. Fauci. Take a look at this. Fauci did more damage to this nation, President Trump, and the world than anyone else this side of the Bat Lady of Wuhan. Wow. Hey, Peter Navarro, welcome back to Newsmax. Congratulations on the book. How are you?
Greg, my brother, great to be with you tonight. Fauci does belong in an orange jumpsuit out of government. I show that in the In Trump Time book. The big lie wasn't to Rand Paul. It was the lie of omission. I sat with Fauci in the sit room, Situation Room, January 2020. He knew right then, Greg, that not only did that virus come from the lab, but his gain-of-function experiments were likely responsible. He didn't tell the president or the task force that cost millions of lives. He is a narcissist, a sociopath. He needs to be gone.
A narcissist and a sociopath. Look, wow. And you worked right by him. You were right there.
Stared him right in the eyes, Greg.
Tell us
Stared
more.
Stared him right in the eyes.
How did you
Go
get...
ahead.
All right, sociopath. Now, that means he doesn't know right. He knows right from wrong, but he has no feelings of guilt or shame. I mean, you really, that's the case here.
Let me say this again. January 2020. All right. I'm in the Situation Room. First time I ever meet the guy. Didn't know who he was. What did he know at that point? The virus came from Wuhan. It surfaced within yards of a Wuhan bioweapons lab. What he didn't tell us is that he had funded that lab. He had lifted the ban on gain of function experiments, which is a technology to transform harmless bat viruses into human killers. And he had in his possession an email from a top scientist telling him flat out it was a genetically engineered virus. He kept his mouth shut. That lie of omission, Greg, if we had only known then that that thing was what it was, we would have had a completely different strategy, pressured the Chinese to release the genome and save literally millions of lives worldwide and hundreds of thousands of American lives. What Fauci did, and it's all documented in Trump time, it's fact, he doubled down on his cover-up. He got this cutout, Peter Daszak, the dumbest guy who ever tried to play God on this planet, to concoct this. It's from a bat cave and from nature. And the left-wing media bought that because they wanted to blame Trump, not the Chinese communists, for the pandemic. Fauci, I'm telling you, the mission of the In Trump Time book is to put Fauci in jail and to get the $20 trillion that the communist Chinese owe this country for launching a bioweapon attack on us.
I want to play a moment where Fauci in May is totally denying gain of function, that the American money funding had anything to do with the gain of function research in Wuhan. And listen to how categorical he is.
The NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research. I will repeat again, the NIH and NIAID categorically has not funded gain-of-function research to be conducted in the Wuhan Institute.
Okay, fast forward to today, Mr. Navarro. Fast forward to today and listen to how he puts the caveat he offers when he's talking about gain of function. Yeah. It's not really, you can't even say, take a look.
Yeah.
You appear to have learned nothing from this pandemic. Will you today finally take some responsibility for funding gain of function research in Wuhan?
Senator, with all due respect, I disagree with so many of the things that you've said. First of all, gain of function is a very nebulous term.
That, Rick, that's the sociopath. You, when I said that word, you were going, Fauci. Yep. That's a sociopath. It's like he lied flat out. Oh, no gain of function research at all. Oh, yeah, there was gain of function, but it really wasn't something that could hurt us. Look, and now the next thing's going to happen. Yeah, there was gain of function research, but it wasn't me. It was that cutout Peter Daszak as the fall guy. I mean, come on. I'm telling you, read In Trump Time. You get to the end of it. You don't think Fauci should be in jail. I'll give you double your money back on that book. He belongs in jail. He's his blood on his hands.
Maybe he belongs in jail. I think you deserve a medal. You wrote a memo January 29th of 2020. This is when Fauci was publicly saying, Americans really don't have anything to worry about here. He said that on my show. You wrote this in a confidential memo internally. The risk of a worst case pandemic scenario should not be overlooked. The disease could kill up to 500,000 Americans and cost the U.S. trillions of dollars if no action is taken to contain the virus. So how did you put that together? And you were so clear and vivid, yet Fauci was still playing games.
Yeah, think about that. I'm like the economist. But back in 2006, I'd written a book that predicted China would create a viral pandemic. I know how to read the intelligence at the White House coming across my desk. I know how to interpret crematoria clouds over Wuhan from bodies being buried. I knew there was a pandemic. I knew it came from the lab. I said so in that memo. I said it would kill over 500,000 Americans. Guess what it did? And the fact, interesting that he was on your show saying, oh, it's low risk. The man knew, I'm telling you, Greg, he knew right then that he was in the deep trouble because he knew he funded that lab. He knew he lifted the ban on gain of function research in 2017. And he had a scientist tell him that thing was genetically engineered. He's a sociopath. He looks you in the eye and he flat out lies. And the fact that he's now telling the American people that kids got to get jabs and wear masks, this, that, and the other thing, lockdowns. We're fed up with this. He needs to be gone out of government and in a jail cell.
Well, I'm downloading the book right now. Well done, Peter Navarro. The name of the book, and let's put the cover up again, please. In Trump Time, My Journal of America's Plague Year, just came out, available wherever books are sold. Peter Navarro, we thank you. Please come back soon. Good to see you.
Thanks so much, Greg. You take care.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
News breaks every minute, every day. You need the app, the Newsmax app. Find it free on your smartphone store. Then watch us anytime, anywhere.
So, is it getting old, this Let's Go Brandon thing? No way. I love it. Let's keep it going. I think Brandon, Biden, whatever, I think he deserves it, all right? He said he'd be a unifier. He said he'd govern from the center. He said a lot, huh? He tried to tell us he's a nice guy. Not working out that way at all, is it? We are adrift, but not for much longer. I'm very confident. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Stand by for Stinchfield.